This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
On the Billiken Sports Network from Learfield, this is the Billiken Coaches Show, presented by Edward Jones. Edward Jones is a proud sponsor of Billiken Athletics. Also brought to you by Royal Banks of Missouri, the community bank for your community. Now, here's your host, the voice of the Billikens, Bob Ramsey.
Hello again, everybody. Glad you're with us tonight for the Billiken Coaches Show here on KMOX. And we've got double duty tonight. That's right. We've got both Rebecca Tillett and Josh Schertz. And we're going to talk ball for about an hour. And love for you to come join us because we're out. We're at Westport Social. That is the home for the Billiken Coaches Show. For those who got there early, we've already had our smoked chicken wings, and we're delighted. I also went with truffle fries, even more delighted. So I'm a very happy, content broadcaster.
I'm amazed that you're able. You're so lively after that. I'd be down for the count after some wings and some fries.
Well, I'm fired up, and then as soon as the show's over, we'll take a nap.
There you go. That sounds about right.
Coach Tillett, how are you?
I'm great. Happy to be here.
What did you order? Let's get the important thing.
That's right.
What
today
did you
I'm
order?
Going with the fish tacos recommended by Natalia.
Yeah, very good.
Yes.
Coach is still perusing.
I am perusing.
So while he's perusing, let's talk women's basketball first.
Let's
Coach
start.
Tillett. You had a nice little run going and won two in a row, even one on the road at VCU. You go to Richmond, tough place, first place team, and you felt like as the game got into the second half, you were in a really good spot, right?
We were. You know, our women really competed, really followed the game plan, really wanted the opportunity to take down the number one.
And so tell me about that second half. How did you get to where, I mean, it's the number one team. And you're on the road, so how'd you get to where you felt like you were in a good spot?
Yeah, we tried a couple things. I think, one, our women were so focused on defending them. You know, they're second in the country in field goal percentage, 51%. So half the time they're hitting shots, and you've got to do something to disrupt that. And I thought our women really committed to doing that together. We watched the film back today, and we're, you know, just learning from it. And even sometimes when we didn't make the right coverage, but you had your teammates back anyway, right?
And that's then, staying connected, right?
Yes, yeah, staying connected. And that was one of our coaches' themes today for practice. And then another woman, you know, has someone else's back, and it just has that carryover effect. So just working so hard to get stops and then made some big plays. You know, in a game like that, we always say you got to take and make big shots. You know, you got to have the courage to do it, and you got to have teammates put you in a situation to do it. And if you miss, have somebody there to clean up the glass. So I thought our women just were really locked in. You could tell in the preparation in the 2 days leading up to it. You know, sometimes teams change how they prepare, whether you win or lose the last game, and the best ones don't. The championship teams or the championship pursuit teams.
They do what they do because they believe in
exactly.
it. Exactly.
Right? And every day they're literally trying to get better. And I think that's how they approach the preparation for Richmond.
And so then things slipped away a little bit. You looked at film today. Was it different as you looked at it today than right after the game?
You know, it's so interesting. I know Coach will say this, but we watch the clips, especially the ones that are meaningful in a game. You end up watching them so many times to dissect, like, what could we have taught better? What could our women have executed better? There were a couple momentum shifts. You know, we felt like we were in the right spot. Even 2 minutes under, we had offensive rebounds that kept us in the game and just needed to make just one more play to cut that lead, especially when they got that four-point lead. We just couldn't seem to get right past that in the last couple moments of the game. But I think, you know, one of our women subbed out, Brooklyn Gray, near the end of the game. She got her fifth, and she came out on the bench and was saying to our team, you know, we know that we can compete. We know that we can take them down in the tournament. And that's the attitude you want your team to have at this time of the year as you get ready to prep for the tournament.
So, Coach, we go to Chicago and play Loyola. Great atmosphere. And, by the way, a quick aside, I thought, I want to get you, see if you agree, really terrific representation by Billiken fans in their building.
It was awesome. Yeah, we were we had a great, I don't know, it felt like a few hundred fans there.
Yeah.
You know, which was awesome on the road, and you could hear when we were playing well, you know, a lot of cheering, which obviously on the road, it's usually just deafening silence. So it was great. It was great to have them there. Great to have them cheering. I thought it you know, created a quasi, you know, like a little bit of a home feeling on the road.
Yeah, and they're for those who don't know, along the one sideline across from the benches, the students get the best seats.
Yep.
And it makes for a fantastic atmosphere. I mean, they're screaming at you, but it's still a cool place.
No, it was for a place that wasn't, you know, I don't know what it seats, maybe like 5,000, maybe 4,000.
4,400.
Yeah, so maybe there was, you know, 28 to 3,000 in there, maybe that, 2,500. It felt much louder. You
sure
know,
did.
Like, when they made on that run late inside the game, when we got ourselves ahead, you know, second half when we made our push and got up six or seven there in the second half, I thought that place was super loud. It had a great acoustics, great energy. Their fans, their students were amazing, but our fans were great too. We had ours behind the bench, and then they put up the rest of them up in that left corner up top. But you could hear them, and then but their student section was phenomenal.
So let's talk about it. You said you got up, and I, despite the outcome, I thought it was a terrific basketball game. And so you get up in the second half. Same questions that I threw at Coach Tillett, I'll throw at you. How did we get up? What were we doing right when we were playing well and got the lead?
I mean, there's, you know, we're doing things well on both ends. I thought, you know, we got out to a rough start. I mean, they made some shots early. We were down, I think, 13-6, and we went on a 12-0 run. We held them scoreless for 7 minutes.
Yeah.
We had a chance in that 7 minutes to really open up a bigger cushion than we only scored 12 points ourselves and missed a couple layups, missed a couple wide open threes. And then, you know, half went back and forth. It was a nip and tuck game to halftime. Second half, I thought, you know, we had a really nice run on the defensive end, some really good execution in the half court. Obviously, Loyola's a terrific team, you know.
Yeah, very good.
You know, you know, one of the top 3-4 teams in the league. And but, you know, got out, and then even at, you know, at 53-47, we had a stretch there. We had, you know, I think 53-46, I guess. And we got up seven and had, in a stretch of about, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, you know, four wide open threes just didn't go for us. They made a couple big plays to get themselves back in, but gave ourselves every chance. But I really liked, I thought the way we executed in the half court was good. I thought our defense in that first 36 minutes was really good against a hard team to guard. And Jaden Dawson was making, you know, some high degree of difficulty shots. You got to credit him. You know, he made six threes, and, you know, none were really open. We had some breakdowns, of course, the game. But going to that final 4 minutes, you know, up by three on the road in that final media timeout, we felt, you know, good about where we had put ourselves. And we were giving up, you know, slightly. I think there was, at that point, maybe 60 you know, right around 62 possessions. We're going to write about a point of possession, a little more than a point of possession. And, you know, right where we want to be on the road against a really good team and a chance to close it out.
Yeah, and so when things start to kind of fritter away, isn't it funny how little tiny things can dramatically change? Miss the front end. I don't have the play-by-play in front of me, but I know missing the front end of a one-on-one, come down and get a three, come back down, turnover, they come down, score again, then they get the steal and the dunk, and it's like, how did this – I mean, it was like – a minute ago, it was like, great, and then it just leaves.
Yeah, it was you know, those things at the end of games are magnified, but it was in a 11-0 run. You know, we went up three. We fouled a 3-point shooter, and they made free throws.
That was the beginning.
Yeah, and then we came down and had a, you know, got a pretty close look, which we didn't make, and then they came down and we went under a guy we couldn't go under on a DHO, and he made a three, and then we got fouled, and we had the front of 1-on-1, we missed, and then we lost a guy on a baseline screen, and he made a three. And the same guy had 9 straight points, and it was 71-65. Then we tried it a pocket pass, wasn't there. Turned it over, led to a dunk. So that was, you know, within, you know, with 4 minutes to go, we're up three. And then with, you know, 2 minutes to go, we're down eight. And, you know, that's just, you know, at the moment of truth, you know, money time of a game, you've got to be able to, you know, to execute on both ends. This league is, the margins are so small. And, you know, the difference in winning and losing is so nuanced. We had too many breakdowns defensively in that stretch. I mean, found a 3-point shooter going under on a guy and then losing him on a baseline screen. Same guy. It's credit to them. You know, fifth year senior, he had 9 straight points in that stretch. And then we had a, you know, a careless turnover, bad turnover. It was actually the right read. Just a bad pass.
Execution wasn't there. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and so. At that point, you know, we're playing hurry up, and we got back into it, cut it to four, you know, but then, you know, we blow a coverage on a DHO and give up a layup. So you don't have the play-by-play. I unfortunately do, like Coach Tillett.
It's imprinted in your brain.
In my mind. So, so ultimately, you know, that's been a little bit of our theme, you know, like George Mason, who's first place in our league, you know, we – you know, lose by two in overtime and had every chance to win that game. These games at the end, at those moments of truth, you know, money time, you've got to really be able to produce your best and get stops and execute. And you're not going to always score, but you got to get stuff in your wheelhouse. You got to be, you know, absolutely airtight defensively. And I didn't think we were very good. George Mason, I thought we were really, for the most part, pretty good defensively. We were really bad offensively in overtime. I thought against Loyola, it was our defense that really let us down.
So I'm going to go back to you, Coach Tillett, and give Coach a chance to catch his breath, and I'll ask the same question. But so you look at the tape today. You had briefly mentioned what you were going to talk you, the theme you were going to go to the players. So even this late in the season, even with some veteran players, still opportunities to teach.
Absolutely.
Coming out of a game.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, first of all, the best players, they want to learn until the last moment. One of our seniors said today, I don't want to think about what the potential are for how many practices are left. Like, I don't even want that to cross my mind. I want to soak up every moment. And I think that was such a great way to say it. And then eager in the film sessions. You know, I thought our team in the film session today, when a team is hungry for the information, like, I want to see it. Sometimes our team will say, play that clip back. Coach, can you play that back? That's when you know they're in a good spot, right? And ready to learn. And I think for our staff, just, you know, it's the teaching part that's fun. We always talk about it might be one play. I like Coach's thing about the moment of truth, or, you know, money time. Like, the work that somebody puts in their individual workouts that then shows up in a game time, and then maybe only 4 or 5 people know that went on in that workout, right? Maybe a GA knows, the coach that's involved, the player that's involved. And yet all three of those people make eye contact. Like, that work we put in just paid off in the moment that we needed it. So I think just the teaching and learning aspect of the game, and, you know, anyone that's done this and devoted their life to it knows that you can go into practice today and learn something new, period, no matter how good of a player you are, no matter how good of a coach you are, no matter how much tape you've watched, there's something to learn, some nuance to understand. And I think our team right now is really hungry for that information, which is what makes us more dangerous right now to our opponents.
So, Coach, teaching? Are we still teaching coming out of a game like that, a heartbreaker?
Absolutely, yeah. I agree with Coach Tillett. I think, you know, that's the whole deal in a season, you know. You know, the competition basically is a mirror. It reflects back on you, like, where you are as a player, where you are as a team, what you're doing. That's like the measuring stick. And then, you know, the good teams are able to really have a process where they are able to apply the lessons of the game and then focus on getting better that day and then really trying to prepare to go out and play their best game the next game. And then they take the lessons from that competition. And every game, win or lose, you know, you hear that. I've always thought that was a pretty dumb statement. You know, I either you know, win or I learn. You should learn regardless of result. You know, like I think,
yeah.
I think there's as much to learn from winning, you know, as there is from losing. I think it's better to learn when you win. The good teams get better while they win, while they have success. But the process of, you know, the competition reflecting back on you exactly where you are, taking those lessons, really trying to internalize them, get the truth out of the game, because there's always good and bad. You know, every game you play, it's never all good. It's never. I don't care if you win by 50. There's things in the game you played imperfectly.
And
if
you don't
get
play
beat
perfect,
by 40, there's things you did well. There's never a game where you go into and it goes perfectly, or there's not just a good play made. So it's trying to take the things you need to do better at. And for us, like, you know, the lessons are there. You know, it's my job, our coach's job. I mean, I think that's what you're trying to do as a coach is to make sure that's how you get better. You know, you take the competition, you take the lessons, you apply them, you move forward. All right, here's what we got exposed in. Here's what we're doing well. Here's what we got to continue to build on. We're doing this well. Here's where we're not quite up to par. This is an area we can grow in. And just like you know, like with Rebecca's team, like, you know, the margins are small. So it's just about getting. It doesn't have, you know, you're not reinventing the wheel. It's not starting from scratch. It's being better in certain areas, which will give yourself. You know, the whole goal is to be playing your best when it matters most. And you know, that's for every team. Elimination time, and that arrives. You know, for every team. Some teams in the NCAA tournament, some teams in their conference tournament, but everybody gets to elimination time. And you want to be playing your absolute best basketball when it matters most. And that's the ability to grow and get better throughout the year and being on a trajectory where, as you get to this point of the year and into March, that you feel like, as a team, you're playing your best. And that's what we're going for. That's where you know, where she's trying to take her team. And she's done a great job of that, obviously, the last couple of years, reflected
that's
in there.
Her deal.
Yes, absolutely.
That's your deal, coach.
And that's what it, you know, what you want as a coach is you want to be playing your best when it matters most. And so for our guys, we're trying to take the lessons from George Mason, the lesson from Loyola. Look at, hey, here's, you know, two of the top four teams in the league. You know, we had the lead inside the final 4 minutes, both games. We didn't close them. Why? What did we do well to put ourselves in? What did we do poorly that instead of being up by a couple, we weren't up by 10 or 12? Where can we get better inside the? And then in the moments of truth at the end, where are our breakdowns? How do we learn from those? How do we get better? But there's a lot of things happening inside the 40 that we can take lessons from and be better from and apply and be better. We get on the court tomorrow.
That's Josh Schertz. Rebecca Tillett is here. I'm Bob Ramsey. We're at Westport Social. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about why winning is hard, but moreover, why winning on the road is impossible. We'll figure it out when we come back. Stay with us. This is the Billiken Coaches Show right here on KMOX.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3, plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy!
And welcome back to the Billiken Coaches Show. We're here at Westport Social. Come by and see us. Having a good time, having good food, good conversation, talking hoops. Can't go wrong with that, correct? So the topic for this segment is, we all know how hard it is to win, period. New paragraph. Why is it so hard to win? I get asked this a lot. Why is it so hard to win on the road? Coach Tillett, I'm going to throw it at you first. You're 4-8 on the road these days. That's a good road record. I know you'd rather it be flipped, but 4-8 on the road's pretty good.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it's funny. I think all the way back to when I was a high school coach and I had an assistant that used to talk to me about this all the time, and I would try to push it out of my mind, you know, that there is this big difference. But there is, and I think what we've tried to do over the years is, what are the ways that we can get our team in the best situation to feel prepared, right? What does that look like for each team? Even this year's team, we've made a couple changes to how we prep for early games. I think I've mentioned that to you before. But then our stat research, right? What do we do on the road? What do our opponents do on the road? What do our opponents do in wins? What do they do in losses? What do we do in wins? What do we do in losses? That we can maybe find, you know, some scouting advantage or some aspect to story tell to our team how we're going to be successful in this perhaps more difficult environment.
Give them the map.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you take Richmond, for example, and what they shoot at home, and I mean, what they shoot in general is good enough, but at home as well. And then how do you try to convince your team that, but not on this day, not on this day, are they going to be able to do that? And what are the factors that go into that?
Do you ever talk to them more about some of that stuff that's not really measurable, like atmosphere and things like that, or you don't say, don't even think about it? What do you do?
We do talk about it. I think one of the things we talk about is, right, kind of an attitude you have to have on the road, the toughness that you have to pack, Jessica Olmsted on our staff just recently was talking about, you know, we pack everything else, right? Pack our toughness, right? Make sure it's in the bag for the games that we are going to play against VCU and Richmond. And I think that's such a good reminder. You know, people talk about a road whistle and officiating and just all the different factors. The band's right next to you and it's harder to hear your communication. So how do you adapt to those adverse conditions? And then understand that if you're in a program like ours that you want to be in a championship game every single year, right, then you're going to be placed in those situations every year. And those are situations that you're working so hard to earn, right? I mean, no matter what, the championship game's on a neutral site.
Right.
Right? So right. You're not going to be at home for the championship game anyway. So you have to figure out all year how to be successful in those environments and how to build the confidence in your team to play their best when it matters the most.
Coach Schertz, 3-7 on the road, but so close these last two road games. In fact, several road games. Really, you're close enough with a handful of buckets, your record on the road could be reversed. I mean, it's that razor-thin margin.
Yeah, we've been there. I mean, I think, you know, I'm the worst at that because I think, you know, the general answer is that people are worse on the road because they're soft, you know. It's a lack of toughness. I mean, it generally is. I mean, everything else is the same, right? I mean, it's just... So it's either, you know, I mean, there are comforts of playing at home. Like, you're in your own bed. The balls are the
your
ones
locker
you use
room,
to practice.
All that.
Your locker room.
Yeah.
Your fans are, the you know, are giving you energy, right? But, like, at the end of the day, that's all extraneous information. Like, I'm so much more into, with our guys, with them, I'm so much more concerned with how we're playing than who we're playing and where we're playing. You know, like, to me, I'm much more convicted with, like, good teams win everywhere, right? Like the good teams that Rebecca's been a part of, good teams I've been a part of. I went through a 2-year stretch as a head coach where we didn't lose a road game, you know, like at LMU.
That's amazing.
Yeah, last 2 years in the Valley, we were 15-5 on the road. You know, and there was a couple close losses in there. And so, like, this year, I think the road is a test of, you know, how connected are you? How tight-knit are you? How mentally tough are you? You know, what Olm said, you know, defense travels, toughness travels on the road. Usually don't shoot as well, you know, just uncomfortable surroundings. You know, if you look at people's, you know, home shooting percentages and road shooting percentages, there's usually a variance. But again, if you defend and rebound and are tough and are tight-knit and connected, good teams win everywhere. I mean, it's, you know, like, I think it's one of those things where people say, oh, you know, they're good at home. Well, then you're going to be a 500 team because you play about half your games at home, half your games on the road. So if you only play well on your home floor, you only win when you shoot well. I mean, you're putting these very low ceilings on your basketball team. And so, you know, we're not there yet. But like you said, we've in the league, we're 3-4 on the road. That includes, you know, we had a chance to tie the GW game, the Loyola game, you know, obviously the St. Joe's game and the VCU game. But and the St. Joe's game was a, you know, 4-point game with 4 minutes to play. So
right. We've
been in a lot of the games. We just, you know, we haven't been able to get over the hump in all the ones we want to. We've had 3 good road wins in the league, but certainly we want to play better here in these last few, or 3-5 or whatever it is.
Do you, maybe it's more fair to talk about where you've coached previously in your career, where you go to a road opponent on a regular basis. You know, every year you go one time. And there are places where you know you've got to survive the first 2-3 minutes because they're going to come out rolling. Have you experienced that?
Well, you know, when I was at LMU, we were, you know, usually, I mean, a lot of years, number one in the country or two or three. I mean, you know, I went
maybe through, they looked at you that way.
Well, we were the Super Bowl for all the teams in our league, you know. So, like, the last 5 or 6 years I was there, literally every time we lost on the road, there was a court storm. So, you know, we want to get our program to that point.
Yeah.
But it was a court storm every time we lost. So, I mean, we would have to, like, literally try to get our guys off. So, I mean, it didn't happen that much, thankfully. But we would go into a game knowing that, you know, that team, that fan base, whatever their best was.
It's tonight.
We were going to get their best punch. We were going to get the fan bases. They were going to get the best crowd. And so when we went to, you know, schools that you guys have never heard of, but like Carson Newman or Tusculum or Lenoir Ryan or Wingate or Queens or whatever, we were going to get the best that everybody had to offer. And so I think that's what you're trying to get to as a program. Because, again, that just goes back to, like, what are you testing? You're testing your teams, you know, how tight-knit are you? How connected? How physical? How tough? How are you defending? the things that drive consistency. Okay, you know, we're not, you know, we might not shoot the ball as well on the road, but we're tough enough to defend well enough to win anyways. Or, you know, I've never bought into, you know, like if you're a team that only wins and you make shots, you're not good. When a team that wins at home, there's a toughness, mental toughness that all good teams have that, you know, they want that. Like, the tougher, the better. Like, you know, I always talk a lot about, like, you know, it's a little bit of the Navy SEALs, right? Just parachute us in and let us compete.
We'll get
like, parachute us in wherever we are. And like Rebecca said, ultimate success in this in college basketball requires you to bring your operation remote. You know, you don't play the games at home, so you got to be able to take your deal on the road, you know, NCAA tournament or whatever, to win a national championship. You're not doing it in the comforts of your home, so that's hotels, that's neutral, that's, you know, outside. So again, it goes back to, you know, you've got to be able to do that as a program, and there's a level of toughness required. And I think it's exactly, you can tell with you know, when a team's not there yet, like their road and home records are vastly different. Really good teams, there's this asymmetry amongst them.
Coach Tillett, if you maybe, like Coach, you might have been that person where they're coming after you as opposed to the other way around, but being in environments where, you know, if we're in good shape after the first 4 or 5 minutes, it's going to be good, but it's going to be an onslaught.
Yeah, as we built it, you know, my previous institution at Longwood, Campbell was the standard, Campbell. Right? And they just top defensive team ranked in the country every single year. And so you had to figure out, and that was ultimately the lesson for that team. We knew we would face them in the tournament if we, you know, we'd have to go through them one way or another to earn an opportunity to the NCAA tournament. And they could really defend. And our team, the year prior to the NCAA tournament, they held us. We were a high-scoring team in the league, second in the league. They held us to 39 points in the semifinals, knocked us out. And we just, you know, we sat on that and thought about that and ended up referencing it in a really good way on the advice of some assistant coaches. You know, we stopped saying their name. We stopped saying the name Campbell because it had become such a thing. And we started calling them something else, respectful, but not just wouldn't say their name. And ultimately, the end of the story was we beat them by 39 in the championship game.
By 39?
Yeah, the number 39. They held us to 39, and then we beat them by 39. But the whole battle for us was figuring out how do we confidently score against these guys and stop them, right? And so that was like the battle of that year. We lost to them twice that year and then found a way in the tournament to have it all figured out at the right time.
One of the things I want to talk about in the next segment, we just got a couple minutes here, but let me tease it a little bit about teams and players continuing to evolve as the season goes on. And because you continue to teach, hopefully the players continue to learn. And Coach, real quick before we go to the break, Coach Schertz, Earl and I doing the games, it was great seeing Kalu Anya dunk and just get up and be powerful, be the athlete he is, go with confidence and throw it down. And then Kobe Johnson is so good. And we just keep going, we want more Kobe.
Yeah.
Give us more Kobe. So these are two guys that have kind of evolved and have really helped complete what you have.
Both those guys, have come a long way. You know, Kobe from early in the year where man, I, you know, In the summer, I was like, I don't know, you know, what, you know, if his competitive spirit's going to align with
mine. Well, he never talks.
Yeah, he never talks. And I didn't know how competitive he was or how much he cared. And, you know, you can, it's a good reminder not to be judgmental. And that, you know, just because somebody's quiet doesn't show that they care, doesn't mean they don't care. And Kobe's growth as a player, the way he's playing, I think he's, you know, leading the league in shooting percentage as a point guard. And you know, he's competing his tail off, and he's a guy that you know, is giving us, and I feel that way about a lot of our guys.
Yeah.
You know, they're giving me everything that they have, and it may not be exactly, you know, what I want all the time in terms of the results, but I can't ask for more than that, and this group is doing that, and Kobe's a great example. Kalu as well, like he's figuring out, and we're figuring out as we go through it together. You know, how we're being guarded. And how he's leveraging, how he's being guarded to benefit the team, right?
You could really see it come along in
Loyola.
Yeah.
I mean, if people aren't really guarding him, so they're sticking a big guy under the rim, and he's figuring out, you know, how to screen off the ball, how to catch and drop the ball to Gibb and Swope and get those guys open shots and leverage And, you know, and like you said, offensive rebound, he's cutting, you know, when his guy goes to help, he's now cutting every time, which is leading to some of those dunk opportunities and that he was missing before. And instead of, you know, I don't want to say pouting, but being maybe insulted that they weren't guarding him, you know, he's embracing it because we've talked about, like, that's the most dangerous guy on the floor. I mean, if they're not guarding you, you know, that's all the cutting opportunities, all the on-ball, off-ball shooting materials, that's all the offensive rebounds. They don't know where you are. You know, and you saw it against George Mason. He got seven offensive rebounds. And so, and he's doing a lot of great stuff defensively. And those guys have, you know, the big three have been, you know, pretty consistent. But the growth of Kobe, the growth of Kalu, their evolution as players has been a huge part. And it's satisfying to see. I think, you know, that's been gratifying as a coach to see those guys come along and be able to contribute the way they are.
Coach Tillett, rather than waiting for the break, I want to find out, because I don't get to see your team nearly as much, although a week from Wednesday I get to do one of your games. That's it's an honor. I love doing your games. It's so much fun. Anyway, are there players or things that you're doing that you're seeing that evolution?
Absolutely. You know, when you asked that question, I thought about, you know, at the end of the practice, we have a circle and people speak their mind on, you know, what we learned today. And we always say, what do you have? And Mar shouted out Hannah Wallace, who's from St. Louis, and just the growth of her from the summer. And we certainly felt the loss of her when she was not able to play a couple of games due to injury. And her defensive presence, right? A 6-foot guard with a long wingspan who's as quick as our point guard, Kennedy Calhoun. And, you know, it's funny, you hear her confidence as well on the bus last night. We're talking about a future opponent, won't say which one, but she said, she's gonna know who I am. Like, I'm gonna guard her and she's gonna know who I am. Now, I think we better start studying right away because it's a pretty powerful opponent we gotta face. But I agree that Hannah can disrupt her. And then Brooklyn Gray shouted out T.R. Simon. Just her,
yes.
The offensive increase in production that we've asked her to take on this role this year. And actually on the radio show a couple weeks ago, she mentioned, like, you know, I haven't really been asked to do that as much in my career. And it reminds you as a coach, right, how they're thinking about themselves and what we're asking them to do. And, you know, we had relied so heavily on her double-digit rebounding and her, you know, toughness. We learned when she was out early in the year, man, we need her toughness every game. And now we're asking her sometimes to be on the perimeter, take more threes. You know, she had a possession against Richmond where they're really guarding her on the perimeter. And she's like, okay, you want to guard me out here? And I'm going to take you inside. And just her versatility and confidence and growth. And just to hear women shout out other women and their progress and reference their growth from the summer or their growth from last year. I mean, that's why we do this.
That's awesome. All right, we're going to take a break. That's Rebecca Tillett. Josh Schertz is here. I'm Bob Ramsey. We're at Westport Social. Glad you're with us tonight on KMOX. We're here every Monday night for the Billiken Coaches Show. We'll be right back. We're back at Westport Social for the Billiken Coaches Show. Women's coach Rebecca Tillett is here. Josh Schertz, the men's basketball coach, is here. It's always fun to talk ball with both of you. And we just kind of got off during the break on kind of a random topic, but I think it's really interesting when we talk about fatigue. Coach, we know you've lost four rotation guys, arguably two guys that were going to start or play starters minutes. Mm-hmm. And people are wondering, well, you're playing five guys and the fatigue and all that. And then we started talking about it here during the break, and we talked about all the breaks you get in a second half of a college basketball game.
Yeah, I mean, it's, look, you never want to only really play five guys, so it's not like I recommend this as a normal you know, way to go. But I think the fatigue thing is is overrated in my mind, particularly in the second half. You know, we played seven guys double figure minutes last year. Six played a lot of minutes. Seventh guy played about 10 minutes a game. But in the second half of games, a lot of times we went with
your five.
Yeah, our five. And the reality of the second half in a college basketball game is it's 20 minutes long. You have the four media timeouts that are in every half of college basketball. Then the first 30-second timeout of the second half becomes a full timeout.
Full timeout.
Adds a fifth media timeout. Then you've got each coach usually keeps their two full timeouts. So each one has one full timeout left. So that's a sixth and seventh full media timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got three 30-second timeouts because everybody uses usually one in the first half. And, you know, so, I mean, and that's not including the stoppages or the reviews or anything. But, I mean, in any second half, you have a minimum of 7 media timeouts and usually 3 30-second timeouts. So in a 20-minute game, I mean, I get it because that's a guys are exhausted or whatever. But really not in the first half, a little more because you have just really 4 media timeouts and a 30. Each team usually 130. But second half, I think it's such an overrated thing. Now, if you have depth and you want to play guys, I think that it shows itself in other areas. But in terms of trying to win a basketball game, I mean, I don't see it that way.
So, coaches. Coach Tillett, probably, well, I don't know if you do or not. Do you like all the video stoppages in the last 2 minutes of the game? For speaking for the fans and the broadcasters, it drives us crazy. And they take too long. And by the way, an aside, I got to go back to Coach Schertz for a second. A veteran crew, a terrific referee crew at Loyola, they were in no hurry to get the game going. Did you notice, like, just on a simple inbound, they'd stand around, everybody would be standing around, wait for him to hand them the ball. Let's get the game moving. Yeah. Did you notice that at all?
Yeah, it's a little slow on some things. I never noticed if it's like a TV thing or if it's like they I have no idea what the...
They were just out for a Sunday stroll or something. It was driving me crazy. Yeah, not that I want the game. I'm trying to get out of the game.
No, but you pace. want the pace of the game. Like, let's go, you know. Yeah, I agree.
So, Coach. All the video stuff at the end, like it, don't like it? Do you like using that extra time for your team?
I certainly love it when it goes in our favor. That's for sure. That happened at Richmond, out of bounds call. You know, I think overall I do like it because I want him to get it right. Yeah. I want him, especially, you know, some of those calls at the end. And then we do utilize him as a timeout.
Yeah.
And I think the interesting thing for your team, which is so true of end of game anyway, is you've got to prep for more than one scenario, right? So you've got your team there, and okay, if it's their ball, this is what we're doing. If it's our ball, this is what we're doing. And you got to keep your team locked in enough in that moment where they're trying to grab a drink of water and catch their breath. What are we doing next, right? And then once the call is made, then decisively taking action in that way. So, yeah, I think overall I like it. Some of the stoppages can become long, though, and you're like, okay, come on.
Make a decision.
We've made all the game plans we need to go. Let's get going out here.
And so... You know, you mentioned in the huddle, especially late in the game, you got, what are we going to do if they do this? What are we going to do if they do this? How much information can you give your group? I had a former Billiken coach tell me, I can't tell more than two or three things. Three's even a lot because they'll get out on the floor and they're going to forget it anyway. Do you subscribe to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to know your team. I mean, I think if you have a group that's been together a long time and has a lot of experience, I'm not just like talking about like older players, I'm about shared experiences, I guess is the right way to frame it. Not like just, you know, five grad seniors out there, but like people that have been with you for a while. I think corporate knowledge allows you to disseminate more information in a huddle because, you know, some of the basic stuff's unsaid. So like for us, where it's a brand new group, I'm coaching all these guys except for Robbie and Swope for the first time. Less is definitely more because you don't want to overload people to where they're, you know, what if this, what if that. And so you know, I think there can be too much information, you know, if you're trying to do, you know, give guys too much in a huddle, where they come out and they're confused. Like the scenario always is like, if you're up by two and shooting free throws, well, if we miss the front end, we're playing out. If we make it up three, we're fouling. If we're up by four, obviously don't foul, you know, and it's like, how much of those scenarios do you want to give guys?
In that moment,
and you just saw it in the Duquesne-Dayton game where, you know, Duquesne's down two, and they press, and they turn them over, and they get a layup to tie the game with 6-7 seconds to go, and they throw the ball in bounds, and the guy thought they were down, and he fouls. And Dayton made one free throw to win the game, and that's how they lost. That's how Duquesne lost, by one at Dayton. You know, there's a lot going on. You better make sure that you're crystal clear with what you want to get done, and less is more, in my opinion.
Rebecca, what do you think?
Us too. I think, you know, one, we practice those scenarios so that you hope that it's an automatic when you get into the higher pressure situation. We also do a couple unique things, I think, and it sometimes takes our freshmen time to believe in this. But, you know, I've never seen them start the game without, like, the great players on the floor. So we always say to our players, do not leave the huddle. If you do not know where you're supposed to go, right, or what you're supposed to do next, like, you know, it's a high-pressure situation. You're supposed to be locked in, but maybe you're not.
Right.
Maybe you're thinking about, I just did that play, or I got to make this play. And so we literally say, do not leave. Grab a coach, and we'll walk you through it even while you're going out there. So some of those things that you have to practice and teach, and they learn them on film, sometimes the hard way.
You know what? That's great, and it's great when they get to the point where they can trust that process.
Yes, and believe that we're not going to get mad at them.
Yeah.
We just want to get the play executed the way we want to get the play executed. So that's something, and then I agree. So how prepared can we be in advance that this is what we want to do in this situation without going too far to Coach's point about you don't want them running like six scenarios in their mind, right?
It's
you want
much.
Them to really lock in on the one you're in. But like something we run into a lot is that team going to stay man or zone in that advance the ball possession? Are they just showing it and then going into something? So your play has to be effective against both, and your players need to be confident on either execution. We had that situation come up recently. So I think those are the things you're teaching. And then to Josh's point about the shared experience, right? Like if Ken Calhoun sees something on the floor, right? We've been together for 4 years and recruited her, you know, her whole high school career before that. So the amount of conversations and shared knowledge about what we want to happen in a game-winning scenario and three championships later, right? If she wants to call something or say something, or we need to act on that. Like her knowledge in the game and her feel of the game is really valuable.
And for her in particular, being a quarterback,
absolutely.
And if a quarterback's got to call an audible, you go with it.
100%. And she's built that confidence and that shared belief and trust with every person in the program.
Yeah. And is Robbie Avila your guy? Is he your quarterback? I mean, that's what I observe. And I don't talk to Robbie much. I'm like everybody's grandpa. They don't talk to their grandpa. They talk to their peers. But I like to watch him in practice because he's always communicating with his teammates.
Yeah, Robbie's got a, you know, certainly for us, it's strange to have a big guy be your, you know, your de facto floor leader, but he is for sure. He knows where everybody's supposed to be. You know, I got mad at the end of the George Mason game because we had one timeout left, and we had the ball out of bounds under, and there was, I don't know, 30-some seconds left, and I wanted to run a play. We just call our, like, end-of-game stuff, like, no timeout left, winner, whatever, two, winner, three. So we know it's a two or three. We have one thing out of bounds. And I'm like, all right, go winner three right here. And a couple guys are looking at me like, and I was I'm like, winner three. And Robbie's like, and I get mad, I'm like, timeout. And I'm like, you know.
He
it,
called
you
know. Something else?
I called timeout because I knew they weren't in there. And he's like, you know, to call timeout. I had him. I knew where I was going to tell him.
Oh, I remember when that happened.
He's like,
yes.
Oh, yeah, he's like, I had him. I was like, and I was frustrated because they didn't know. But he knew not only where he was supposed to be, but everybody else. And honestly,
he was going to
let it play out. He was going to let it play out. And he did it.
I love that.
And then he's smart, too, because we had a corner out of bounds in front of our bench in Loyola second half. And I was like, hey, we're going to – it was something we had. We'd run it from out of bounds under. But it was like a dead deep out of bounds side. There's 4 seconds on the clock.
Yeah.
And I wanted to run that, and so I'm like, hey, we're gonna run. It was another winner play, and Robbie, they're looking at me like I'm like, so Robbie goes down and unties his shoe, and he starts tying his shoe, which gave me a chance to explain, and it actually wound up being the doors play where Gibb got a wide open three, missed it.
Yeah. But it was
we
a great
got a
play.
Wide open three, and, and they ran that. But I mean, he literally went down, untied his shoe. And started tying his shoe, and I know he just did that because he knew that
needed that
they
extra
didn't know
minute.
What to do, and he needed extra for me to be able to communicate
that
to him where to go.
So,
and
so
that
like
his
is really
intelligence
cool.
level is through the roof.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll look ahead. Stay with us. It's the Billiken Coaches Show on KMOX. And we're out of time, so quick reminders. The women play 7 o'clock on Wednesday against Dayton. It's the Pink Out. We need a big crowd there. It is the Pink Out. We'll see you then. The men are off all week. 1:30 on Saturday against Rhode Island. As usual, another big crowd is needed. For Rebecca Tillett and Josh Schertz, I'm Bob Ramsey. Good night from Westport Social.
Of fun await this winter in Indiana. feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
sleeper. Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.